Hello and welcome to the first edition of Half Court Press. I'm John Niatawa, Chris Hetty alongside me. And Chris, man, I actually saw a basketball game on Saturday, a college basketball game.
Technically
an exhibition.
Yeah.
Creighton beat Winona State pretty badly. But it was action, and it was guys moving the ball around and shooting and the ball going through the net, and it was really cool. And I really want to talk about that, and I'm sure I will at some point during this podcast. But we have to start with the news of the day in college basketball. Obviously, a long sort of drawn-out saga over the last year involving a bribery scandal. The first news of it was released in a year ago, really, this month.
Yeah, I realized that today. I was looking up, I was writing about Tim Miles' comments on everything, and I was like, okay, let's go for the beginning or whatever. And it was like forever. Like, it seems like it was 2 years ago, but it was like a year ago.
It was a year ago, and the FBI investigation started 2 years before that.
Yeah.
So the FBI investigates for 2 years, releases its findings, arrests 10 people, and now we're starting to get into the trial, one of which just concluded, and also during that process implicated Creighton and a lot of other schools. So where do you want to start with that? Because obviously there's an ESPN report that linked Creighton to Creighton coach Greg McDermott, Preston Murphy, former Creighton star Justin Patton, to Christian Dawkins, who was one of the men convicted in that trial. That came out. That story was released on Sunday. We're recording this on a Monday, so obviously it's kind of top of mind.
Right.
I guess, yeah.
Let's start.
Also, Tim Miles had some comments about the situation.
Tim talked about it a little bit today. Let's start with this. For Creighton fans have probably heard it, kind of what's going on over and over again. Nebraska fans probably not as much, and like general college basketball fans, which you might have, might be a little in the dark. So let's just start with this. Let's start with what is the newest, you know, what's the newest thing that's happened,
right?
And what does that mean in context of what has already happened? Like, bring us up to date and what has happened in your opinion, you know, and in the courts and the trials and whatnot, and kind of Creighton's role in all of that.
Right. So a sort of a reset.
Sure.
Basically, I mean, the verdict was, the jury came to a verdict in this bribery scandal case a week ago, convicting Christian Dawkins and two other individuals. Christian Dawkins is this would-be agent, runner,
aspiring agent.
Yeah. Third-party guy. So he's convicted of his role in this fraud case, and two other Adidas employees are too. But as it relates to Creighton, Christian Dawkins, because he, as we found out, managed a recruit's, for lack of a better term, recruitment. I mean, he was interacting with college coaches behind the scenes on behalf of this kid and his family, this kid named Brian Bowen. Creighton recruited this kid, and so there's a connection there. There's a link there. And also, Christian Dawkins worked for a company called ASM. It's a sports agency out of New Jersey. It was founded by Andy Miller. He's the head guy, and that's the agency that Justin Patton signed with. Justin Patton obviously started Creighton, had a great redshirt freshman campaign, went pro after 1 year in college basketball, and signed with ASM. That agency employed Christian Dawkins. The same Christian Dawkins who was managing the recruitment of Brian Bowen.
Right.
So
on the surface, doesn't look great.
Couple connections immediately. And we're finding out more details about the circumstances involved with those connections as this trial, well, now that it's concluded, there's more evidence that's going to be revealed that the government assembled over the course of 2 years. Like I said, the FBI spent 2 years investigating this, so they have a ton of different information as it pertains to wiretaps and video surveillance and bank records and phone records and interviews with various people that have flipped or turned or tried to take a deal, make a deal with the government. So we're starting to get pieces of this evidence. Now, what makes it tough a little bit is trying to jump to conclusions without the full picture.
Sure.
I think we have parts of the picture, but it's still hard to know truly like what happened.
Yeah. And that's not only just the case with Creighton too. I mean, Kansas had more evidence stacked up against it and still nothing really came down specifically for KU.
So far,
yeah. Right. And so it's even like there is a ton of evidence toward Bill Self and Carl Townsend not necessarily playing, you know, a nice genuine recruitment of a couple guys.
Right.
But even then it's hard to kind of jump to conclusions to kind of how what's going on, because there's still so many questions unanswered. So it's not just a Creighton thing.
Well, and I think what's interesting about it, and probably what makes it fun from an outsider's perspective, is that fans will jump to conclusions because this is like gold.
Red meat, man.
Yeah, for every fan base across the country that I mean, as long as your school hasn't been mentioned, you're in the clear and you're fine just throwing darts at everybody else.
Right.
And I feel like locally I've seen it kind of play out a little bit here where Nebraska fans are having a lot of fun at Creighton's expense because obviously they're full and willing to infer and sort of jump to some conclusions because, it, like you said, on the surface it doesn't look great, but there's still a lot of detail, and Creighton fans will remind us of this, there's still a lot of details and facts that have to come out.
Sure.
But on Sunday, ESPN sort of revealed 2 months' worth of this would-be agent, aspiring agent, Christian Dawkinson's phone records, and it wasn't a surprise just because Creighton had recruited the kid who Christian Dawkins was the handler for, and Creighton's, one of Creighton's players, signed with Dawkins's agency. So it wasn't a surprise that Greg McDermott, assistant coach Preston Murphy, and Justin Patton were included in those, that their phone numbers were included in those call logs. But again, we don't know what was discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So the ESPN story just, it was pretty, it felt like sort of the first page or first chapter of a novel that was revealed. I mean, it was just, they got access to his phone records, and then they said, here they are.
Yeah.
And you do what you will with
it.
And so I think right now we're still trying to piece together what it all means.
So what's Creighton's response to all these things? What's McDermott been saying? Right. What's kind of the mood around the program while this is going on?
Yeah, well, I think they're careful, like a lot of schools that have been mentioned, just because they know that at some point the NCAA is going to try to follow up on some of the claims that have been made. At this moment, from what we know, as it relates to Creighton, there's not that smoking gun, or there's not clear-cut evidence that says, oh, an NCAA rule was broken. And so I think that Creighton's officials have felt pretty confident, Coach McDermott and Athletic Director Bruce Rasmussen, president, has even released a statement. Like, they've been pretty adamant about saying no rules have been broken. And it's hard to dispute that based on what we know. But it's pretty clear that at some point, I don't know when, it might be a year from now or 2 years from now, who knows, when this is over, the NCAA is going to look at, it's going to say, okay, here's everything that we learned as it pertains to the FBI investigation and the trials that played out in federal court, what was testified, what evidence the government compiled. They're going to have stacks and stacks of notes, and they're going to try to follow up on that. And so the question will be then for Creighton is, how do they answer some of the questions that the NCAA is going to bring up?
Right.
Like when they say, when they hear, when the NCAA has, you know, some investigator has in his notebook, at the beginning of the first trial in New York, a recruit's father said that an agent had a deal in place with a Creighton assistant coach to give $100,000 to a family and two jobs for the kid's commitment. I'm referencing Brian Bowen. This was Brian Bowen Sr.'s testimony in federal court. So the NCAA knows that that was said.
Right. Now they're going to follow up.
Now they're going to go to the Creighton and say, okay, what do you know about this?
Sure. And to input some Nebraska angle on this, this is a lot of what Tim Miles talked about today in Lincoln, was this idea of he wants the NCAA to come in and do that and be really vigilant with that kind of discussion. I think, you know, going to Big Ten Media Days and kind of talking to some other Big Ten coaches about it, and Jim Delaney even talked about it, the Big Ten commissioner, I think from an outsider's perspective, or from a coach that is lucky enough to not to be in this situation, they want the NCAA to come in and kind of clean house a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like the phrase that Miles said today was get the cheaters out of the game. And so my next question is kind of to kind of wrap this up so we can talk actual basketball. What's next and what's the timeline?
I do want to say that I'm glad Tim Miles said that. I don't think that enough college coaches across the country have
been weird,
forceful with their comments, especially ones that you would assume are pretty above board with what they're doing.
Coach K saying it was just a blip, like it was just like this isn't
even
a thing.
Even Jim Delaney said something like, you know, sort of downplayed the scope of it.
Yeah, there's like two trains of thought. Like the first one is, this has been going on for forever. Who cares? Like, not a big deal. That's what Mark Turgeon said. That's kind of what Coach K said. It's kind of what Jim Delaney said, which is like, yeah, man, it sucks, but it's been going on for a long time. So, like, what are we going to do about it? Yeah. And then you've got Tim Miles and Tom Izzo, who...
And I think Mike Bray was another from Notre Dame who's pretty outspoken about it.
Yeah, Miles just basically saying, like, this can't happen anymore. Like, we need to actually... Because from their perspective, it's basically, if the NCAA doesn't come in and do sweeping regulations and get people out of programs who are, you know, allegedly doing these things, then it's just a totally different ballgame. Yeah. Then it's not even remotely fair, where it's just going to be, these schools are going to continue to do these things because there's precedent that it's not against any rules or not, and the NCAA is not going to do anything about it. And then there's almost no benefit for doing it correctly or doing it the right way and not just breaking the rules, you know? And so I don't know what the next like year or two has in store, because the thing you have to think about is there are so many allegations and there are so many schools and so many assistants and so many recruits that are now kind of wrapped up into this whole thing that this is going to take a while to kind of sift through, don't you think?
No, for sure. Especially if what has been reported is that the federal government, because it's in the process of prosecuting individuals in regard to this case, like the federal government has asked the NCAA to wait.
Right.
Just wait for all the
findings and all that
to be revealed. And then you can take all that and do what you want.
Yeah.
So if the NCAA is indeed waiting, then that means that it won't start on its investigative process until, I think the third trial is March or April. I mean, it's
a weird time for college basketball right now because there's this big dark cloud hanging over everything where, you know, Miles spoke at the podium, and then usually we'll talk out in the hallway with some reporters. And my plan was to ask him out in the hallway just to kind of get him. We were, you know, everyone's in good mood, and you don't want to kind of ruin that during an interview or whatever. And so, but he was asked about it while he was on the podium by a TV guy, and he was like, man, well, I almost thought I was going to make it through, like almost like so, like it's always on their mind, like it is always on these coaches' mind, and even in February, whenever we're like knee deep in conference season and like the tournament's around the corner and like there might be potential coaching changes all over the country and all these things going on that usually we'd be covering, there's still going to be this black cloud of like everything is wrong with college. You know what I mean? Like it's just this weird moment, I think.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that not every coach is acknowledging that dark cloud is there.
Right. Right.
And I'd argue, in fact, that Tim Miles is among the few, the minority of coaches that are actually acknowledging that there might be an issue.
Has McDermott said anything outright about kind of, here's what I think about this, or has it been we're investigating it?
Yeah, not since Creighton was directly implicated. Mm-hmm. I think, when the investigation was revealed in September, or the end of September, early October, a year ago, I believe we talked to Coach McDermott about, you know, it being a dark day for college basketball.
Yeah.
And the hope is that the sport will emerge for the better from this. But at that point, Creighton was only loosely tied because it wasn't, you know, there weren't phone records obviously released about Creighton having contact with Christian Dawkins. And there were still other details like Brian Bowen's father claiming in court that Creighton had an offer on the table. Like those types of things weren't there, mm-hmm. but there were sort of loose ties to Christian Dawkins and some of the things that he had done. So yeah, I guess for me and my perspective, my thought is if the coaches do want the game to change and if the NCAA indeed wants the game to change, they're going to have to act on it and stop acting like
this isn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. And not only coaches, but like prominent coaches.
No doubt.
You need Coach K, Jim Boeheim, Bill Self, Tom Izzo, you know, the big guns to say this is wrong.
Right.
And that might be an issue because
they might be implicated at some point.
You're at a point. You're at a point now where like we're talking about Zion Williamson. Is that his last name? Williamson.
Yep,
from Duke. He's currently at Duke, and there were alleged offers on the table from all these different schools that they were offering him $100,000, $200,000, all this stuff.
Zion,
and then he ends up at Duke.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you can create the line there, right? And then Coach K says this thing, and so that's the issue. It's a good point. That's the issue now where coaches are saying, oh, it's not that big of a deal, and that's not going to help.
Right, where the crux of it is you had a kid in Brian Bowen who there's clear evidence that's been outlined not only by the FBI but also by the prosecution and even the defense at times during the course of the trial, where Brian Bowen, there were offers on the table for his commitment, and eventually he did go to Louisville, and his dad received just the first installment of what was supposed to be a $100,000 payout. The first installment was just shy of 200 grand, but he received it in a parking lot in New Jersey or something like that at a gas station. So, and allegedly received money like $2,000 or something for housing from a now former Louisville assistant. So, and there were reports of Brian Bowen receiving money, or the family, the dad receiving money before college, like to play AAU, to play at a certain prep school. I mean, so it's pretty clear that there is a pay-for-play scheme concocted.
Yeah, not just from one school.
Right, and we're talking about a player who is, like, ranked 25th in the country.
Right, exactly.
I guess you could say, like, a fringe five-star.
Yeah.
It wasn't a surefire one-and-done prospect. So the question is, okay, if all these people were willing to make under-the-table deals for a player of his caliber, what would people be doing for players who are...
like the Andrew Wiggins of the world.
By far,
project
to be bigger impact players in college and project to have lasting careers in the NBA. Those types of guys, even when they're 18, what kind of free market value do they have?
The idea that went down, that the payment went down at a parking lot in New Jersey, it, like, I imagine it, like, being rainy and, like, a guy in a car pulling up and, like,
I'm pretty sure it was a parking lot in New Jersey.
Like, that's the best. That fits what's going on so perfectly.
There are a lot of just sort of wacky details that you just kind of, I mean, there's a whole saga in there about whether or not, you know, Brian Bowen Sr. wondering if he can travel with that much money. And, you know, obviously the third-party individuals like Christian Dawkins and the financial backer who was involved in it, and they're like, well, we can't just give him a check because the NCAA could have access to bank records, so we got to do cash.
Right.
How are we going to do that? And there's a problem with Adidas funneling the money to him. And, you know, it was...
Cheating seems complicated.
It can
be. But apparently sometimes it pays off.
Yeah. Right. I think that... For me, one of the, I was glad that Tim Miles said that, but I do think that that's got to be more of a consensus opinion from his colleagues if indeed the NCAA wants to change.
Yeah.
Within its current framework, because a separate conversation, we won't get into it, but I do think it's worth mentioning that a separate conversation is about this amateurism model and whether or not it can even sustain a collective sort of commitment to following the rules when the players involved are valued at so much.
And this is just college basketball.
Right.
We're not even talking about college football, which has significantly more money in it for coaches and for other programs and revenue wise, like, and you can even talk about, like, market value of a five-star defensive lineman. Are you kidding? Like, if Brian Bowen was $100,000, like,
right,
Robert Kimdichie was probably like a $2.7 million deal, you know?
If you equate it, like, where's the sliding scale
seriously
at? And it's been a wild story. So what's next for Creighton? That's I think is a question that we may not know the answer to at this moment, just because we're still in that information gathering stage.
Sure.
And I would imagine Creighton is as well. Just what else does the government have, and what else will the NCAA find out as it investigates? What will Creighton find out as it sort of self-evaluates and looks into the claims that have been made. So far, obviously, Creighton's been pretty adamant about saying that no rules have been broken, but there's a lot that's going to happen.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, there's still evidence that's going to be unveiled as it relates to the first trial. There's another there's two more trials, and Christian Dawkins is a co-defendant in one of those trials, too, with three other assistant coaches. So more could come.
Right. It's not even close to over.
Which is, I think, one of the reasons why Creighton's probably been pretty selective and careful with its comments publicly, just because it knows that, you know, there could be more to
There's
come.
There's a lot coming,
And I mean, you know, from a legal perspective, I think the argument is always made to wait until that day, and you have that day in court.
Mm-hmm.
While Creighton's not going to court the court of law, it's going to the NCAA court at some point, or maybe the investigation ends before that. But at some point, it's going to have to answer to the NCAA, and maybe it's just best for the university to wait until that day to sort of share its side of the story.
Sure.
But my hope is that we do hear more from Creighton over the coming days and weeks about the process, about what it's found, about, you know, sort of its interactions with Christian Dawkins, that Coach McDermott and Assistant Coach Preston Murphy, just what all that entailed. I think the president promised faculty, alumni, students, and staff transparency throughout the process, and that can be hard to deliver on, obviously, when you have they hired an outside legal firm, a law firm, to help them manage this process. So I would imagine a lot of them, you know, that usually the approach is to, again, wait until it's time to make a statement. But yeah, Creighton's following the sort of the procedure that
you would expect
most universities have.
Right.
I mean, Kansas has responded the same way, and schools like Kansas and Arizona have been implicated maybe to a larger degree than Creighton has to this point. So
this is a basketball podcast, and we will talk actual basketball. I guess just for people that, if they didn't listen to our preview, we'll talk Nebraska basketball, we'll talk Creighton basketball.
We are going to hopefully we can have some fun. That's my hope.
Yeah, we will. No,
but,
we will.
You know,
we will.
We kind of had to start off with a serious
topic. I'm glad that we did, because it's the news of the day.
No
doubt. And we will, as we've said before, we're going to try to split it up, but we'll talk Creighton and then we'll talk Nebraska, because we know that sometimes, you know, Nebraska fans don't like to acknowledge that Creighton exists, and vice versa.
No doubt.
And so we'll start with
Creighton.
Until they play.
Ooh, this is going to be good.
It's going to be a fun game, man. And it's like a couple weeks away, but this is going to be a good one this year.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, it's especially because Nebraska, I feel like their fans are riding high right now, right? Because you got a team that's in the preseason top 25 in the coaches poll, receive votes in the AP poll for the first time since 14-15.
Yep.
Where was it picked to finish in the Big Ten? Fifth?
The media poll was I think it was fourth.
Okay.
I voted them fourth, so I think it was fourth.
Okay.
I think I remembered that I had the top four about the same.
All right. So, and then on the other side of the equation, so Nebraska fans are riding high.
Right.
Meanwhile, their rival Creighton is kind of immersed in this, nefarious.
What's been the fan reaction to this whole thing? Like, what reactions are you getting, or what are you noticing?
I think Creighton fans are, for the most part, just sort of like, hey, let's tap the brakes and let's assemble as much facts as possible, and then we'll make a determination at some point. Because I think a lot of them, if they're honest, know that it doesn't necessarily look good. From a PR perspective, it's not good.
Are they just ready for actual basketball?
Well, sure. But then again, here's the other thing, too, that plays into sort of this dichotomy of the local fan base is that Creighton's not predicted to do very well. I mean,
right.
Picked ninth in the Big East, and you know, not receiving any votes in any top 25 polls, from the assessments of most preseason magazines and experts, various websites, national websites, analysts, they're not expecting to make the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So we got like two differing degrees of sort of expectation and hype and buzz going into the season. So for Nebraska, like, it's a good time.
It's a good time to be a Nebraska basketball
fan.
By the way, I
didn't vote for Nebraska in my preseason top 25. I am an AP voter, so I'm one of like 60 or however many of us there are that contribute to the poll each week. And we released our preseason poll at the start of last week, and Nebraska was 30th, I think, in terms
They were 30th. They only got, I think it was maybe six votes in actually ranked, like in the top whatever. But I think a lot of people like yourself had them not too far out.
I was pretty close to having them in, but then the people who like Nebraska really like Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, there was one vote at 17 and two at 19, one at 20, two at 21.
Right.
And then like a couple of whatever, but so there are some people who are really, really high on them. I am pretty high on them. Like I've cooled off a little bit. Ken Pom currently has them at like 18 and 12, and that sounds about right. Like, I don't know if they go 22 wins.
Where does that sit in the Big East?
In the Big Ten. I think it would be, anywhere between, like, fifth and eighth.
Okay.
So they have an exhibition on Thursday. Do you want to talk about Creighton's exhibition
first?
No,
I want to talk about your Nebraska exhibition. But I did want to say this, though. Two of the reasons why I was the top four players are really solid for Nebraska, mm-hmm. obviously. And I mean, honestly, when you stack up their starting lineup against the Big Ten, I think you can make an argument that they clearly have one of the best starting fives in the league. My concern is depth.
Right.
I think I have concern about whether or not they're going to the rebound, especially on the defensive end, consistently, and can mm-hmm. they shoot? Mm-hmm. So I guess that's three concerns. And that was enough for me to keep them out of my top 25, yeah. preseason top 25. But certainly the way that I've voted over the last 2 years is like the preseason top 25 matters for about 2 weeks. Yeah. And then when we actually start seeing games, it totally gets jumbled.
Completely.
And so they could rewrite the narrative within 2 weeks.
The next 2 weeks, in the first 2 weeks of the season, they'll play Seton Hall.
Yes,
and that's going to say it. That's going to tell us a ton. And Nebraska.
Okay. But for this exhibition, though,
yeah,
are any of my concerns? Do they match with your concerns, or have they matched with Creighton's coaching staff's concerns through the preseason? I guess what are we watching for this?
No. I think your concerns are spot on. I think the first four are great. They're really talented. They're all healthy.
And apparently Copeland
is playing. I wouldn't be shocked, and this sounds weird because Nebraska has James Palmer Jr., but I bet you for the first half of the season, Isaac Copeland leads them in scoring.
Okay. Bold prediction.
He looks really good. He's, you know, treating it like a professional, like he's really locked in. Again, Miles has brought it up a million times, but like he was a five-star, like he was a top recruit in the country, and ended up at Georgetown. Obviously, got hurt, and there's a lot of things that went into that. But he looks great. Isaiah Roby is healthy now, which is really good news because I think if that plantar fasciitis or whatever was wrong with his foot, the coaches think that it was plantar fasciitis. Roby doesn't. Whatever it was. He seems fine.
The foot mystery, right yeah. or left foot? What are we talking about? We know what foot yet?
I think it's his left foot. Okay. I'm not sure.
All right. I just wanted to be...
Trying to paint a picture.
Right. So, but it is a mystery.
Mystery of the foot.
The mystery of the foot.
Yeah.
That's good.
But he seems fine. Like he's...
But maybe the mystery of the foot doesn't matter by the time Nebraska's on the court.
Right. And so he seems fine. Glenn Watson seemed completely okay at the scrimmage that they had. And that's the four, right? And then James Palmer is James Palmer. I think he'll eventually figure it out. I think right now he's not playing super well. Just because, I don't know, like he didn't shoot very well in the scrimmage, and he didn't look really good in the scrimmage before that. But he's their best player, so he'll figure it out. The question becomes the next four guys, because I don't think you can make it. I think you could make it to the tournament with like seven guys if you're first five or six are really good, but like you need eight or nine to really make a run.
I feel like if your top four are, I mean, Villanova a couple seasons ago made it to the NCAA tournament as a one seed with like six guys.
Right.
But their six guys
were incredible. Yeah.
It was like Josh Hart and
right.
The senior who hit the game winner, the 3-point shot, Chris Jenkins,
mm-hmm.
Against North Carolina and, you know, a couple other veterans. I mean, it's doable.
You can do it, but I don't know. Nebraska's four is really good. I don't know if they're taking him to the Final Four because of Division Four. So the question becomes, like, how good is Thomas Allen? Like, can he become a consistent shooter from three? How much can Amir Harris bring to the table in terms of defending guys that he needs to lock down? But, like, is he a liability on the offensive end? Because his shot looks like Sean Marion, except for not as good as Sean Marion. And he doesn't really look for his shot as much, and so that's going to be kind of an issue. And then Nana Kenton, like, is he ready to play big-time basketball? Like, he wasn't that impressive last year, but he seems to have been taking it more serious this year. And then Tanner Borchardt, like, big dude. Like, can he be consistent? Can he really take the minutes that they need Roby to sit and Copeland to sit sometimes, too? Like, can he be efficient in that time?
Right.
And so that is not only the question of, like, this exhibition in the first month, but like the year, like it's, which is weird because like they've got these four really good players and they're going to take them far, but can they actually make the next step and like be the first team that, you know, goes and wins the NCAA tournament game and like, you know, helps Tim Miles keep his job? Like it's on those four, like it's on if Nana Kenton can like guard, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And so that's a fascinating thing with this team right now.
Yeah. The sort of the growth of their role players or auxiliary players, mm-hmm. that are going to have to contribute in some form or fashion.
Right.
Thomas Allen feels like the X Factor to me. And I know, and again, like, you've sort of made the point that you can't really, it doesn't really feel like it's going to be zeroing in on one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they actually need four guys to step up and build sort of some reliable depth. But if he can stretch the floor, I feel like that is like, I look at that starting five, and you bring in a guy like Thomas Allen who can consistently hit a jump shot from 3-point range. It makes it
nearly impossible to guard him.
Yes,
basically.
Yes.
Because then you've got five guys on the floor that can spread the floor and shoot. And you know, the weird thing of that tournament team they went, you know, the Terran Petaway year, is like Ray Gallegos is one of the reasons why they went, because like Ray Gallegos, you know, he didn't play super well, but he made enough threes that, like, you know, kind of helped extend the, you know, the defense and kind of spread people out or whatever.
And a lot of
and
times,
then Ray Gallegos leaves, and then they're horrible the next year, and you're like, man, they need Ray Gallegos? Like, this is weird, you know?
A lot of times, all you need is the threat,
right?
You know, at some point, that guy has to hit some shots,
right?
But
if you can introduce the idea to defenses that Thomas Allen is going to make a shot from three, then it just screws everybody up.
Right.
So I think you're right that if he plays well and they've got a starting core five and they feel comfortable with Amir Harris and Nana Kenton and Tanner, then, and like, even just comfortable, not even like great, but just okay, then I think that they'll get it going. The problem is we don't know any of those things yet, like, at all.
Right. So we'll get a first glimpse mm-hmm. on Thursday. They play Wayne State College.
Yep.
And all eyes will be not necessarily on the top four guys,
right,
but the next four.
So, and Creighton already played.
Creighton has its exhibition in the books.
How'd they look? What it looked like? Was it what you expected? Anybody jump out to you?
It's funny because, like, Creighton's team doesn't necessarily have, you know, the sure thing top four the way Nebraska does. I feel like they've got, Nebraska brings back four veterans that you're pretty confident you know what to expect from them.
Mm-hmm.
With Creighton, I don't know if they bring back anybody that you know what to expect from. But I do think that there's some depth and some youth and some talent there that gives you some sort of optimism as you project where they could be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made 19 3-pointers.
Right.
What?
So
wait, let me just, like, they lost. They made 19 3-pointers in an exhibition game. Again, it's the opponent is Winona State. It's a Division II school. Like, I get it, but they went 19 of 40 from three. And this is a team that lost Marcus Foster, Kyrie Thomas, Toby Hagner. Marcus Foster and Kyrie were, you know, big-bodied wing players who were explosive enough to get to the rim and had that threat of knocking down a three-pointer in your face. Shot 40% from three, both of them did. And Toby Hagner was your stretch four that's kind of been iconic at Creighton, who could hit a three-point shot with consistency. He shot like 38%. So those are top three scorers, top three-point shooters, and they're gone now.
Right.
And so my thought was, are they going to get consistent shooting? Can they even rely on the three-pointer in the way that they've done over the last year? And the first statement that they have made so far, at least publicly, is that, yes, they can rely on it. They got plenty of shooters. It's fine. They're going to shoot a lot of threes.
Right.
And apparently they're going to make some threes.
Right.
At least they're confident enough to take those threes and make them.
See, the other reason why I think this Nebraska-Creighton game is going to be really fun, this is funny because this podcast is going to feel for the first 3 weeks of just like a really long preview.
That's like a build-up.
Yeah. But it's fun because Creighton's always has a fun offense. They're always spreading the floor and all that. But Nebraska's actually trying to do some of that this year, too. Like, they're definitely going to shoot more threes. The biggest difference is they went 3-for-25 in their scrimmage as a team,
against
shooting
Iowa
from
State.
Three. Or no, just from the other night when they had played a half.
Oh,
they were 3-for-25.
Team scrimmage.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Okay.
They looked terrible.
Ooh.
But they're going to shoot a lot more threes.
Okay.
So when you look, when you're watching that game, they make 19. Is that a system thing? Is that there are actually more shooters on the team than you thought? Like, what do you attribute that to? Because that seems like your absolute main takeaway from that exhibition.
Well, I think it's the most attention grabbing takeaway. I watched a lot with their defense because I think to me that might be the biggest determining factor of whether or not Creighton can match sort of the expectations that it has for itself. You're losing a guy like Kyrie Thomas, who was the Big East Defensive Player of the Year 2 years in a row, and he could guard 1-4 without a problem. It didn't matter who the other team's best scorer was, he would lock him down.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that guy. They think that they can replicate his mentality, because the thing about Kyrie that made him really special, aside from his length and instincts and just his frame, was he did not want to get beat. He took it personally if he got scored on. He was, and it was an everyday thing. So they've tried to kind of cultivate that same mentality with their guys across the board, particularly guys on the perimeter. They hope that they've gotten there, and you could see, and that's sort of what I was looking at that. And, sure. and they're also trying to, they've tweaked a few things about how they're going to play their man-to-man look, and they're trying to be a little bit more aggressive on the ball, which they hope will sort of like produce that intensity, layered attitude that Kyrie had. So I was looking at that. But I think the most attention-grabbing thing, and again, the jury's still out on their defense. I'm not quite sure where they're going to be. And honestly, the jury's still out on their shooting, in my opinion. But they did make 19, so you got to give them
credit. Right, you
got to
give them, yeah.
19 out of 40.
You make 19 threes in any game, you're going to win no matter what. But
yeah.
Even if, you know, if they're playing Villanova, that's basically what Villanova did to everybody in the last, like, 2 years.
Yes.
They just went out and made 19 threes, and it didn't matter. Like, they just killed everybody.
Yeah, you had no shot. So, I don't, I don't think that that's going to be something that you're certainly not going to be able to rely on a daily basis. But they had 9 different guys make threes. Tyshawn Alexander, who's expected to kind of be the guy who ascends into the go-to scoring role as a two-guard, he was 5 for 8 from three. Davion Mintz is going to be, he's their point guard who's going to take on more of a scoring responsibility. I think he was like 3 or 4 or 4 or 5 from three, something like that. So Mitch Balick didn't shoot it well last season, but he's a dead-on shooter. Martin Crumpel can stretch the floor and hit a couple. So that's what they've built their program on. They want guys that can pass the ball, that are unselfish because they want to space the floor and they want to take advantage of defenses when they're in recovery mode. So they want guys who are willing to pass. They want guys who can shoot, and they want guys who are skilled and athletic enough to run in space. And so that's what they've built this team. They've assembled that.
Right.
But it's just really unproven and really experienced, and it's hard to know what to expect.
It's really interesting that we have these two programs in this state where Creighton, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Creighton is kind of built on this high-octane offensive system. We're going to spread the floor. We're going to run. We're going to just kind of overwhelm you. And then you've got Nebraska, who's like, we're going to score 53. But we're going to keep you to 48, and I'm cool, and like we're cool
just gonna
with that.
Grind you down.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's the way, because I think it's interesting. Because
and do you expect Nebraska to kind of stick with that identity?
Completely. Okay. Like I think their identity is changing a little bit, in terms of they want Copeland and Palmer to get to the basket, and they want everyone to be able to shoot from beyond the arc, just to kind of mess with people. But their defensive identity stays exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like I think the one thing. It stands out to me that you're like, I'm watching their defense to make sure that they can actually defend and what they're going to do. The jury's still out, but, which like is interesting because on my end it's the opposite. I'm like, who's going to score?
Right.
Like who besides James Palmer can score? Can Isaac Copeland shoot 40%? Like who's going to like are they going to make 19 threes in their first four games? Like you know.
Well, and that's because I'm guessing it's the same way in Nebraska, just reverse, whereas Creighton. Like, yet you assume the systems, they've recruited for the system. They're going to score.
Right.
They'll be fine there. That's what you would assume.
Yeah.
If they're not, uh-oh.
Yeah,
but
right.
You assume they'll be fine. It's a question of whether their defense can get to that certain level that it needs to be at to just sort to
maintain that. Yeah.
Where at Nebraska, they just got to score enough to maintain because
exactly.
You know their defense is going to be
I think they're still going to be able to defend. Like, like Isaiah Roby has put on a lot of weight in a good way. He's huge. I mean, you go on the floor and you watch him just stand around. Like I had to interview him at Big Ten Media Day and I was like having to, it's bad. I mean, he's huge. He could like eat me. And so he looks good and he's going to play the five. Tanner Borchardt looks really good. He's kind of trimmed some up and he's put on some muscle. And Isaac Copeland looks like a freak too. Like they're going to be able to defend down low. Like that's kind of one thing that they haven't been able to do really well. That's one thing that they really liked about Jordy Chimanga, but obviously that didn't work out. So they'll be able to defend. It's like, can James score, can James Palmer Jr. score 17 and more? Can Copeland have about 15? Can Roby get about 12? Can Watson get about 12 or 13? Can Thomas Allen get about 10? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's that this is the way the whole season's going to go.
All right. We could probably talk for 2 more hours.
Yeah, probably could. We're going to try and keep these a little bit brisk.
Well, yeah,
brisk, but good.
Yeah, as concise as possible, but jam-packed with a bunch of knowledge and goodies. And I do think that as this podcast progresses over time, we are going to evolve and we'll have different fun elements, some ideas that we've concocted that we're going to throw in there from week to week and have some fun.
Yeah.
I think, but we did have to talk a little bit about what's going on in college basketball, and I'm sure we'll actually talk about it a lot more going forward, just the impact of the bribery scandal on the game and you know, Creighton being implicated and what's next for the Blue Jays involved with that case. So
yeah,
it's not going to go away. I think that's probably the biggest thing, and I guess a lot of those who are involved with the game hope that it'll change it for the better.
So. Yeah, and the thing that I envision for this podcast, I think that we both envision, is that I think there are a lot more college basketball fans in the state of Nebraska than we might imagine.
The attendance numbers would back you up with
right,
that
claim. Exactly. Yeah. And like when it was announced that I was going to be the new Nebraska basketball beat reporter, I gained more Twitter followers over the next 24 hours than any time in my entire life, and two, significantly more than when it was announced that I was going to be a football beat reporter. Like, the two times that I got two different Nebraska football reporting jobs, I got like five people were like, oh, we'll see what that guy's about. Yeah. But basketball was like, gotta know who this guy is, like, right. Gotta know everything about Nebraska basketball. And so that was kind of where the idea was like, okay, there's definitely a market out there. So we will, and I know that, again, I know we know that Nebraska fans and Creighton fans don't get along and they don't like it, but I hope that people will be able to appreciate the conversations about Creighton and kind of where they are in the college basketball world, Nebraska, you know, where they are, kind of their rise or fall. I mean, who knows?
Nobody knows
at all. And also kind of once the season starts to pick up in January and February, I have no doubt we'll talk more. Here's where everyone else is in the college basketball world. You're an AP voter, so I'll probably pick your brain about who do you think is pretty good, who can make a run, like things like that. Like, I think people and we'll, you know, add some fun to it. Like, I think this will be fun. It'll be a fun little experiment.
No doubt. Last thing, we're going to try to end the podcast every week with a prediction, a Nebraska-Creighton prediction today. If the two teams played, who you got?
I'm going to say Creighton.
Really?
But only because if they played this second, Creighton just played an exhibition game, and they know who they are. Yeah. And Nebraska's not played an exhibition game yet, and they really need to. So if they played right now, I'd say Creighton by like five.
Wow.
Like just like right now today, if they'd just like, hey, we need to play right this second.
Interesting. I got Nebraska ranked at 36 in the country and Creighton at 40th. Mm-hmm. So I'll stick to my preseason rankings where they're at.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll change.
I will say, if Nebraska had played an exhibition game and Creighton played it at the same time, then I would take Nebraska. I'm just saying at this exact second.
And that's what we're going to do. We're literally going to do this every week.
Yeah.
This exact second.
I can't wait for people on Twitter to hate it.
Yeah, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? But it's going to change. And And what's great about it is we will still be making predictions about what if Nebraska and Creighton played after they played.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Because honestly, what's funny about it is last year, after Creighton won here against Nebraska, I heard from Nebraska fans 2 months later. It said, "We would beat you guys, you know, like,
right
we
now.
Would beat Creighton right now."
Well,
if we
and
played,
it's funny too because like teams in November and December are so much different and so much worse than in February that like I almost wish that the game was like right before conference tournaments because like at the best possible moment that they could play
rematch. Maybe we can get that. I don't know. Fun first episode. Chris Hetty, I'm John Niatawa. We'll be back next week with more college basketball talk on the Half Court Press.